What made you decide to look into a career in cybersecurity?
So there's this conference called the Grace Hopper Celebration. So Bank of America was there. I basically just went up and talked to them. I wasn't sure they were still hiring because it was the last day, but she introduced me to a hiring manager. And this person, his background was also in software engineering, also in finance. We had a lot of similarities in our background. He was basically like one of the senior leaders in the cybersecurity organization of the bank, like told me about like the things that they're working on. And I told him about the work that I did at JP and my previous experience in my various undergrad research and some externships that I did before that. So basically I ended up signing on my offer with them after graduating.
Now at Bank of America, what did your rotational program consist
of? Basically, I was in a 2-year rotational program.
Out of those three, which ones did you gravitate to the most?
Honestly, I liked all of them. Right now in my career, I prefer the defensive side and DRC.
When did the YouTube channel come up?
And I wanted to do something outside of work that was still something. Because like in college, I always had part-time jobs. I always did work studies. I always was in like student organizations. So I always had something else I was doing outside of school or work. And I also had always been curious about making a YouTube channel, but I never did it because I was like, what am I talking about?
Welcome back to another episode of Textual Talk. I'm your host, HD. And as you know, I'm a cybersecurity professional, content creator, and a career coach. In today's episode, we have a very famous face. Well, I like to call her a famous face when it comes to cybersecurity YouTube. We have Ms. Sandra Liu here today. And she's come to join us, probably talk about her journey, some stuff she learned from content creation, and how has she pretty much made all these helpful videos in cybersecurity. But if you are watching us on YouTube, you know what to do. Hit the subscribe button, thumbs up, bell icon. Make sure you hit all to be notified when we're dropping new content. And if you're listening on any of the podcast platforms, please leave us a review, share out the podcast. It helps us out with the podcast metrics. And last but not least, join the Patreon. Because when y'all like to see this episode in person versus virtual, I know I would, but we need funds to do that. So please join the Patreon. Sandra, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I reached out to you. I don't know how long ago it was. And he was like, yeah, I'd love to just reach back. I think he said Q2 or something like that. And I seen, oh, it's Q2. Let me see if she's not busy right now.
Yeah, the timing was perfect.
Right. So for some of my listeners who may not know who you are, which I highly doubt it, could you introduce yourself to them?
Yeah. So I'm Sandra. I'm a cybersecurity analyst turned tech content creator. Right now I'm basically on a 1-year career sabbatical is what I'm calling it. And I'm taking a break from working as a security analyst and basically working on my YouTube channel with Sandra and creating cybersecurity content.
Great. Now, I want to kind of start off before we get to the fun stuff that we were kind of discussing before this. So you're from, I think I was going through your profile. You've probably seen that I viewed your profile today. I was just trying to line some stuff together.
Oh, yeah.
So are you from New York?
No, I'm from Philly.
Okay, you're from Philly. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least I kind of got it right. East Coast. And so coming out of Philly, did you know that you wanted to go to school and major in something STEM related?
No. Well, maybe. I originally was actually a nursing major. And then freshman year orientation, I think they cover like all the classes you're supposed to go through. And it was like orgo, chem, bio. And I realized I'm not really like a life sciences kind of person. And also I'm scared of blood. So it's like, it makes no sense for me to be a nurse. Although they do amazing work. Kudos to them. And I decided to switch into computer science. And it was kind of just for fun because I knew some of my old classmates from high school majored in CS. So I was just like, all right, let me just try this. And I ended up not doing too well in a few math classes. So I switched to IST, which is information science and technology. And it's basically like IT, but in my school, they call this like the CS dropouts. I think they do that for a lot of schools. If you've heard of that before, but Yeah. So I basically joined IST and I honestly really liked the classes. There are a few cybersecurity classes, but not that many. It wasn't until like my senior year when I was looking for a full-time job that I even applied for cybersecurity roles. So yeah, not on my radar.
Interesting that you say CS dropouts. I was the person, technically I was an architecture dropout and went to computer information systems because I didn't feel like dealing with the math, dealing with some of the language barriers with the teachers. And I wanted to kind of like enjoy myself. And I saw anybody had to do anything engineering in college was always busy and was mad stressed. So that's the reason why I didn't want to go there. And I always felt like when I went to computer information systems that the technical skills that I possibly didn't, well, would not gain there, the soft skills that I would gain in that type of major would eventually pan out for me in the long run, which has held to be true. So I saw that you did that too, because that was interesting to me. So, okay, we pretty much got similar major. Like yours is information systems, mine is computer information systems. So it's like really the same thing, just a different name. But I did see, so what year was it, I guess, into your career that you got that first internship?
So my first official internship was my junior year of college. So this was like 2018 summer.
Okay.
Before that, I was mostly working part-time jobs that weren't that tech related. I had like a work study job that I was doing. I worked in a computer lab. I did teaching assistant jobs. Yeah. Yeah. I see a lot of parallels between our backgrounds, honestly. Yeah, so I didn't have anything official until junior year, but I was applying since like freshman year. I just didn't get anything, I applied. So my first internship junior year was with JP Morgan, and I applied freshman year and sophomore year. I didn't make it both of those years. So third time is the best or something. I don't know. Right.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah, third time's a charm. Yeah, so that was actually it was for a TAP technology analyst program. And I was actually mostly doing software engineering, front end engineering. But my team was actually focused on basically like securing the data for certain internal tools. And I wasn't technically in a cybersecurity internship, but it had cybersecurity components to it that I could talk about in my future cybersecurity interviews. So it actually perfectly aligned.
I'm sorry about that.
No.
But that's cool. And so one of the things is I've been in the game for about a decade now. And so I'm pretty sure you've talked to people that want to get cybersecurity. I talk to people that want to get into cybersecurity. One of the things I always tell them is like, you may think you want to do something, but you really never know until you do
it. Yes.
Was that so what true. Software engineering was for you?
Sort of, yeah. So I actually didn't like coding for a long time. I mean, I switched into this major because I knew there was going to be some kind of job security. I mean, nowadays the market's different, but this was back in like 2015 when I chose my major. So like CS majors were like everyone wanted to be a CS, or everyone knew the CS majors would probably have like a decent chance to find a job after college. And I was like, you know, that's kind of my goal going to college. So I ended up like doing a whole bunch of coding classes. I actually got a D in my first coding class. So, you know, I'm not the best developer. I'm well for that first. But I ended up taking a few C# classes, and I actually really like C#. I think it was mostly because I had a really great professor. I ended up TAing for him for two semesters, and he basically taught me that, hey, coding can be enjoyable. But then when I was looking for full-time jobs my senior year, I was applying to everything. I was applying to data analyst roles because I had some background experience doing some undergrad research in a data. It was like a bioinformatics role. It was part of my school. And I did software engineering. And there's also like some cybersecurity roles. But the way that I got my first job in cybersecurity was actually going to a tech conference and basically interviewing there. But coding, I always thought I could go back to it if I like really wanted to, but cybersecurity was like the interesting thing that I kind of never thought I would have a career in. And that was like, all right, well, this is the most interesting. So I thought it was like a good shot to go into after graduating.
Okay. Yeah. Because funny enough, I always feel like when I look at some cybersecurity job postings, I'm like, y'all looking for a software engineer.
Oh, really? That's like, crazy.
That's what I feel like for like a lot of roles. But you kind of answered one of my questions. So I know I kind of want to flesh it out. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, how did the pivot come about from software engineering to getting to cybersecurity? And I guess also, I guess even before that, what made you decide to look into a career in cybersecurity? Because I think at that time, if you said this is around 2018.
Yeah.
I think around that time, it was beginning to ramp up because I had finished school years prior to that. And then around that time in 2018, I was in my master's program, but it wasn't for cyber. But around that time, I did start seeing more of a boom, especially in the area that I live in now, where companies were taking cyber more seriously. So was it just like, just go research, hey, what jobs could I do that's going to pay me good enough, you know, and I only have like a college degree or what? Like, what did you, how did you do that?
All right. So there's this conference called the Grace Hopper Celebration.
I'm familiar with
it. Yeah. So it happens every year. I've actually been attending since my sophomore year. I actually didn't attend last year, but I've gone like six times, like as a student and also as like a hiring person, like doing interviews and like talking to candidates for the company that I was previously with. But basically there's like a whole, there's this giant career fair there, and there's a bunch of companies there and they're hiring primarily women for tech roles. So there's this one company, Bank of America. I can say that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's on you. You don't, you don't work for them anymore. So
yeah. So Bank of America was there. This is the last day of a 3-day conference. And I already, they had like in-person interviews. They have in-person offers. If you get an offer that you can leave the conference with an offer in hand by the end of the week. So it's like a really fast-paced conference. And that's why a lot of students like it so much. And basically last day, I already finished all my interviews. I was just looking around the different booths, and Bank of America was one of the companies with the biggest booths. And I basically just went up and talked to them. I wasn't sure they were still hiring because it was the last day. But I think the person who talked to me liked my resume enough, I guess. And then they moved me down to, I guess, a recruiter that was more senior. And then she introduced me to a hiring manager. And this person, his background was also in software engineering, also in finance. We had a lot of similarities in our background, similar to us. And he was basically like one of the senior leaders in the cybersecurity organization of the bank. And yeah, he basically like taught me or told me about like the things that they're working on. And I told him about the work that I did at JP and my previous experience in my various undergrad research and some externships that I did before that. So all that, I guess, really aligned with what he was looking for in a candidate. And basically, I ended up signing on my offer with them after graduating from that conference. So yeah, but I wasn't looking for like applying for cybersecurity analysts or cybersecurity rotation programs, but it ended up being a rotation program. And I had no idea what I was going into, to be honest, but I really liked the conversation I had with this hiring manager. And I could tell that he was really passionate about cybersecurity, and he had like a software engineering background. So I knew he was technical and knew like the skills that I was bringing to the table. And I think that made the biggest difference in the whole conversation.
Nice. Yeah. You said a lot of things. I know for one, yeah. I was going to say like good things come to you when you're not looking for them. So I think this is one of those situations. I recently made a video about people like should just apply to jobs anywhere. And also in that video talking about sometimes when it comes to getting cybersecurity, it's about like timing and like the time and the place. And it just seemed like that was like your time. Like for me, I got into cyber back in 2017 because I went to a job function Intel was having. It was like when you join the HR talent community, it's like, hey, we're having this little hiring event or networking event, you know, come out. And they were pretty much about to start a SOC. And that's how I got my start. So it was like the right time and place for everything. So I do tell my clients that as well. It's like sometimes you're just trying to, well, it's not working. And then eventually all the interviews and eventually the offer comes in, and then you're like, okay, it was worth it. I had to kind of like learn something there. But Also, another thing I want to touch on when you were talking, I was thinking about those financial institutions.
Yeah.
Love to take talent away from the other place.
I've heard of that too.
They love it.
Yeah.
I think I worked at three. So it's the same thing. Like they said, okay, I'll see that you worked at so-and-so. Hey, when do you want to come? Like it kind of gets.
Really?
It gets like that. So I think also like one of the benefits I do like about finance, the pro and the con is, for the most part, some of them, they may not pay as big as some like the big tech companies.
Right.
But to me, they still pay above average, especially when you start talking to different recruiters and they're saying, hey, I'm offering this. I'm like, hold on, I'm getting a better deal here. And it's probably like less work. I'm good. Let's do this. Cause so pretty much that was 2018. So did you graduate, I guess, in the beginning or middle of 2018, or was it towards the end of 2018?
No. So I graduated in spring of 2019. 2018 okay. was, so basically I signed my offer October 2018 and I didn't start until I graduated. So it's basically okay. like a semester ahead. Yeah.
I bet you were having fun. It's like, I've never got this
school stuff. I
was still in school and I got an offer. Look at you. So I've never got to experience that.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Honestly, it's like really nice knowing that you have a job. But I know like during the pandemic, a lot of people were having offers rescinded. So honestly, it's like even when a company gives you an offer, it's never going to be like 100% set.
Yeah.
Like, and that's like a hard thing. I've seen like someone talk about recently on LinkedIn that they got an offer after looking for like 4 months and then the offer got rescinded because of certain budget realignments, like randomly last minute, and they lost their offer. And it's just like, that could have been like weeks of interviewing and prepping. So
yeah
it's never 100%. I've
gone through that before of getting a verbal and them saying, hey, unfortunately due to the economy, you know, we got to pull the rec and open it, you know, in Q1 because of yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But at the end of the day, everything is business. So you have to learn kind of just how to take it for what it is and hope the next opportunity that's meant for you will come your way. That's kind of how I take it.
Mm. Yep.
So now at Bank of America, what did your rotational program consist of? Like, did you get to do like different cybersecurity roles or what was it?
Yeah. So basically I was in a 2-year rotational program. And so I had 2 1-year rotations. And then at the end of it, I basically got to choose if I wanted to go back to my first team, stay with my current team, or go into a different team. So I was basically in 3 different teams in those like 3 years that I worked there, which is it's like basically I had like 3 different careers in 3 years, which is pretty fast. But I liked kind of like understanding like what each part of the cybersecurity organization did. So the first team, I was under a manager who is basically the program manager for cybersecurity technology at the org. And at that point, I wasn't doing that many technical things. And so I actually shared with my manager that was something I wanted to keep up with. Specifically my software engineering skills, even though I was no longer in the space, I still wanted some technical work to be working on. So I ended up splitting my time in my first rotation on a network security application that was developed in C#. And I love C# at that time. So I was like, yeah, just I'll work on that. And then the other half on the program management side, which is a lot of work and not something I was used to because I was never on like that side of tech at all. And in my second rotation, I was in a junior pen testing team as part of the bank. And that was really interesting because I got to sit in on so many like red teaming assessments and demos. And I got to see so much that I don't think like a junior person like me would have ever seen. And then in my third team, I was basically on a governance and compliance team. So we really ran the gamut, honestly. But I was like leading this internal audit that we're doing for some of the new processes that we had on our team. And that was like, that was my first look into anything like GRC related. So me taking that on, I was kind of surprised that my manager gave me that level of ownership on that. But yeah, it was a great learning experience. It was my first time dealing with internal auditing.
And just like leading a big scale project like that with a lot of visibility. So that was the rotation program, basically.
Nice. Out of those three, which ones did you gravitate to the most?
Honestly, I liked all of them. For different reasons, though. Because I think right now in my career, I prefer the defensive side and GRC. I think those are the two areas I'm most interested in. If I were to go back into the cybersecurity space, I would mostly be applying as SOC roles and GRC roles. For a time, I was interested in threat intelligence, but I wasn't able to get a rotational program rotation in that. So maybe in the future, I could try to do some kind of pivot in that. But I kind of like being jack of all trades in different areas in cybersecurity. I don't know how good that is for my career, but I know a lot of specializations make more sense for a lot of people. But so I guess I'll say the GRC one for now, since I'm kind of leaning towards that.
Cool. Now, I think it's still cool because you'll see on applications, they'll say, oh, you need to know how to do this or this or this. And like, I was like, do y'all not know like how sometimes in some places, like you don't get a chance to do these things? Like you are looking for a unicorn. So being able to do many different things can possibly help you out to be that unicorn. And I will say, like, before doing IR, I mean, you already kind of know how important threat intel is, but you really don't know until you need it. And how a good threat intel team is very good, and they can have you already ready for the potential things that you may see. And I've experienced that, like, you know, within this year and last year. I thought, you know, it's pretty cool, like, especially with some of the stuff they do. I think that's a role that doesn't get a lot of shine, as well as this other role that I wanted to do while I was at one of the banks, but I couldn't do it because I just started at the bank like a couple of months into like my tenure there. And it was like, you got to be in this role for like a year to leave. And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh, wow. But they were trying to steal me to the threat modeling team. I want the threat model because that's a niche skill set. Everyone, like, if you go type in threat modeling, there are a lot of jobs, but it's not going to be a bunch. So they're looking for somebody who's done it a while. And it's pretty cool. I think it probably would go into some of the stuff you were kind of learning in GRC and also really all three of the jobs you did with the penetration testing, the program management stuff, and the GRC stuff. I think it would kind of lump into that.
Yeah, for sure.
While you were doing your first rotational program, is that, because I was going to ask this later, but I was like, I feel like we would skip over in time because a lot of stuff coincides with one another.
Right.
When did the YouTube channel come up?
Nice. Good question. So I'm originally from Philly. And then when I graduated, my job was in the New York metro area. So I basically, most of my friends stayed in Philly, actually. So I didn't really know that many people in New York. And I wanted to do something outside of work that was still something. Because like in college, I always had part-time jobs. I always did work studies. I always was in like student organizations. So I always had something else I was doing outside of school or work. And I also had always been curious about making a YouTube channel. But I never did it because I was like, what am I going to talk about? So this was like November 2019. I was like, I started my job in July of 2019. So 2 months into, my first job. And I basically just started this YouTube channel. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I was like, let me just do it. So I just made videos, and I wasn't making cybersecurity videos at first. I was making random videos, and I already deleted them all because they're so cringe to watch. But yeah, I don't even know what I was filming. But I basically, one of the videos was how I got my first job in cybersecurity. And at the time, I had like less than 1,000 subscribers. I was just making random videos. And this video, I think, got like 1,000 views or something. And I was like, whoa, that's a lot of views. So, and then I got a bunch of questions in the comments of people asking me like, oh, what certs did I have? How did I prepare for my interviews? And like random questions about cybersecurity. And I was like, okay, well, I can make another video answering these questions. And before I knew it, I was kind of just making cybersecurity videos, and the channel slowly became a cybersecurity and tech like career advice channel. And since then, it's been about almost 5 years now. So I've kept up with regular posts, and now I'm, since the last, I guess, like 10 or 11 months or so, I've been primarily doing tech content creation full time since on my sabbatical. So it's pretty crazy where life takes you.
Yeah. And we'll probably get some more into that later on, because I know I think I might have found you like 2 or 3 years ago.
Really? Which,
yeah. Because I started commenting. I was like, this is some good stuff. Like, I learned the do's and don'ts. Like,
yeah.
When I started YouTube, I was doing a lot of stuff wrong. Of course, like, I mean, I kind of knew how to make content, but to try to get visibility, I was stepping on people's toes. I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had not a script, but I'll say, hey, you know, I'll say something, and the script will be, you know, go check out my new YouTube video. And I was posting on people's YouTube channels.
Oh,
that might have been related to it. And I was like, that's definitely not the way. And
sweaty.
I learned from that, though. But it was funny. I really just thought about that when you were talking about, like, we just started and took off. And yeah, we'll definitely talk about that, because I think I know why your channel took off the way it did. Mm. So you were at Bank of America for pretty much 3 years and some change. And then, I guess, what made you think it was time for a change?
Good question. Yeah. This was basically after the pandemic, and I was on my team, and it's not that I really wanted to leave the bank, but my team was basically requiring us to come back to the office 5 days a week. And by that time, I already moved out of the city. And I basically really enjoyed working remotely, I guess. And I think my biggest issue with it was the fact that I was the only person in my team in the New York City office. Since I've gone through like 3 rotations, my teams are in like random cities, and most of them were in Charlotte. So I didn't have anyone in the New York metro area anyway, but I would be going into the office to be meeting with them on the same conference call as I would have at home. So I figured maybe I should start looking for other remote opportunities, since at the time there were a lot of companies that were like only hiring for remote roles. So I was just applying casually. I think I started in December of 2022-ish. And then I think February was when I officially signed my offer for Stack Overflow for their information security analyst role.
Nice. Man, I think we might have lived the same life.
Oh, really?
So my first financial job that I was at, I'll just say GS for the people that know what those initials stand for. They wanted us to come in. I think we already coming in, like, at first it was supposed to be remote for like a while. And then they made people go get the vaccine and come in like 3 times a week. And I ended up moving further out. And I was just like, it's just too far. Traffic was too bad. I said, I'm gonna take my chances elsewhere. So the other company I went to that I told you I worked at, they were cool too, but just like you, all my team was in Columbus and I was the only person in my office. So 2 days out the week, I'm coming up there for no reason, because I'm never meeting with anybody on my team.
Exactly.
I used to be like, why am I there? Now, one of the things I used to do that I knew I could get away with, because they just wanted to see if you bashed in at the office. They weren't seeing how long you were there.
Oh,
so like I would badge in the morning, like 8 or something. And then like lunchtime, on my lunch, I would just go home and finish the rest of the day from home. Because they never said, if I ever got in trouble, I said, y'all never said to stay the whole day. You just had to come into the office.
Right. That makes sense.
Hey, listen, if you listen to this right now, do not try that. Let me do my own stupidity. Don't try what I did. So don't do that. Okay, so now here's another, you're probably going to say this is a good question. I know you were a security analyst for Stack Overflow. I think Stack Overflow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what was like your day-to-day life? Because we know a lot of security analyst roles could mean different things at different places.
Yeah. So at Stack, we had a really small team. We're like less than 10 people. Wow. So we basically did everything, like everything. We didn't do like red team assessments, I guess. Usually a lot of small companies will have an external or third party vendor come in and do those. But I did a lot of, I guess you would say like blue team SOC work. We also manage a lot of third party risk stuff. So anything that had to do with procurement, anything that had to do with legal privacy, anything that had to do with incidents, like it was just us. And then GRC too, like we were going through SOC 2 and ISO while I was there. So it was a pretty heavy lift for the team. But I think I was working with some of like the smartest people that I've ever worked with on that team. So honestly, I really appreciate, and I was the most junior. So everyone else, I think, had like 10 plus years of experience. I had like 3. So honestly, and you know what's funny? They told me that the reason they hired me was because of my software engineering background. So what you said about cybersecurity roles that sound like they want software engineering skills, that might be pretty true.
Yo, if you're looking for a way to start your cybersecurity career, then check out Josh Matacor's course at Level Careers. He has a great cybersecurity course targeted for beginners, very affordable. And if you're familiar with Josh Matacor, he's also a brilliant YouTuber and puts out a lot of helpful content. So
here are some of the reasons why you can choose cybersecurity: high demand, job security, competitive salary, work variety, and fulfilling work. The national average salary of an information security analyst is $113,000. Overview of the course: theory introduction, security refresher, security frameworks, security regulations and standards, security operations signals. Then you have these great labs with Azure, logging and monitoring, Microsoft Sentinel, secure cloud configuration.
So if you're interested in that course, click the link in my bio and use my code to get 10% off your course.
Because I didn't have that much going for me in terms of like cybersecurity. I'm sure there were better candidates that had like 8-10 years of experience, but I was the primary candidate with software engineering experience. So that was the biggest reason why they hired me on the team, even though I was super junior.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had consults with software engineers. I'm like, if you learn a couple of these foundational concepts, you will be fine, because one of the things with AI, machine learning, a lot of the entry level one, you say SOC work and security analyst work, is kind of being automated a lot of. So you're going to have some other skill sets about yourself to find different roles. So unless you're at a smaller company, bigger companies have the money to do more automation and possibly leverage AI. But I thought I want to ask you like a interesting question, because for me, I know in my role being on the blue team, I'm always staying current with like cybersecurity news, especially these big third party breaches. Because 9 times out of 10, if you work at a big enough company, you're using one of these providers. And so with your experience at a high level, was that kind of like how it was for you guys at times? Like there may have been like some type of third party breach or something that you guys have to kind of figure out if, you know, Stack Overflow's data is like okay from the third party that's handling your information, just to make sure on your end.
Yeah, basically. But I think that would automatically be an incident spun up, and we would get a few SMEs on the call to see whether or not we're using certain tooling, because you never know. There's like some skeletons in the closet at every company. But like, yeah, we basically have, honestly, I think at Stack, the SRE team was like the backbone of the company. Like they kept the lights on, and they were also like one of the first responders also for every incident that we had. As security team, we provide support, of course, wherever we can. And we also had like on-call rotations for incidents. But SRE is oftentimes the one doing a lot of the hands-on work for anything that goes wrong, like downtime or DDoS attacks or any kind of incident that we have that impacts availability. So yeah, I would say so.
That's what I figured. I like to tell a lot of people, one of my clients, he actually just got like an entry-level SOC IR role. One of the good things about those roles, pro and a con, is you're probably going to get thrown in the fire pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
But the pro is that you start learning so much different things about the environment to where it really helps you out. Because that's the hardest thing. Is like, especially in an environment, like I worked in environments where the knowledge was there, but it was tribal knowledge. it wasn't written down anywhere. Mm-hmm. So now you're instantly trying to figure out who is the SME, and now you're trying to get this information. So you're working on documentation to update some stuff to actually help everybody else out, so they don't have to go through what you go through. And that could be a mess, but it's pretty cool. And one thing I like about incident response is it gives you a level of visibility that you may not have in other roles. So if you start doing a good job, and then other leaders of different departments start like seeing your face and your name coming up in different stuff, it'll help you out with like getting promotions or other things. So it's kind of like one of the trade-offs too.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you stayed there probably about a year, right? About a year or some change too?
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Okay. Now we're gonna go back into what we asked about right before this question about like pretty much your second, you know, full-time job. So all the while you are working and getting your experience, because I remember when you made the video about like you got the new job and you had Stack Overflow. So I remember all that. But all the while you're doing this, like you're blowing up on YouTube.
You think so? Wow. I don't remember.
Yeah, you have like triple the subs that I have now.
Maybe I should keep better visibility into everything. I do know we're at like 90 something.
Yeah, yeah. You got triple what I have now. Like, I think around that time, you and Josh were like really blowing up.
I love Josh.
But how was that? Like, I guess at one point, I know earlier we were talking about, do you have an editor? At what point did you say, I need to go get an editor for this?
Yeah, so I got my editor. Okay, so I guess first, before, now I post once a week, but at the time when I was working, I was posting twice a week and posting two videos a week. For like, they're like 10, 15 minute videos, but it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot. It's a lot of editing. I think that's what took up most of my time. I was spending like 15, 20 hours a week just editing. And I got my editor in December of last year. And when I quit my job in July of last year, I was like, well, let me just try to like take a step back and focus on making quality content and not rushing to. It's because I set a precedent of two videos per week, like way back in like 2020 or 2021. And I just told myself, I would promise myself that I would keep to this upload schedule. And if I didn't keep to it, I'd let myself down. So it was just a mental thing. It wasn't even a reason that I had to post twice a week, but I ended up starting to post once a week, and that became so much better on my schedule. And I basically, now I'm just working on YouTube full time. And honestly, a lot of my time now is split between primarily filming, storyboarding, or scripting for videos, and then working with my editor. At one point I had a VA, but I no longer have a VA anymore. But yeah, so basically just me and my editor.
Yeah, I looked into a VA once, and I was like, once I got some of those tools I told you about, I was like, I don't know if I really just need one to do this yet. I think I was like, when stuff gets really unimaginable for me, that's when I probably will do it. But no, I mean, you were putting out some high level, like quick content, you know. There are times I have short content, but for the most part, most of my stuff has always been either like a long story time. I only have like a couple of ones, so maybe like I'm actually showing a problem or something. So I do have some more things that probably may be coming down the line that may be a little shorter eventually. But because truth be told, those are the ones that do probably the best, like on YouTube sometimes, like between like 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. If you got the right, if you hook them right, thumbnail's good, they getting some out of it, you know, they're commenting, they're liking, they're sharing it, like the algorithm is gonna feed it to who they feed it to. And I think you were consistent with doing that like for a very long time. So I was like, man, I said, y'all are killing it. But I mean, that's a good thing. It's like you look at different people's content and you figure out, okay, cool, I could probably do this or that. Like I'll see different content creators' content, but I don't, like, I can't watch all the content. I have to pop in on a good video, listen to it, and give a good comment, and then kind of like just go on my way. Just because I think if you start watching a lot of somebody else's that makes like similar content of yours, like, you may start trying to adopt like their style versus I think what made you is just like your own style of how you put out the information. I think that's what kind of makes everybody be able to grow on YouTube.
Yeah, thanks. I think my biggest negative comment that I get often is that I talk too fast.
And I was going to bring that up.
But oh, really?
But I think that's one of your things.
Yes, like, it's hard for me to not. I don't know.
Well, see, right now you're actually not talking fast. So I don't know if it's like if you're doing your script when you're talking fast or if it's some cool genius thing you're doing to where you're doubling up the speed when you edit. So it's making you talk fast.
Oh, no, I slow down my voice when I edit. I actually set it to like 0.86 or something.
Okay.
0.86. Yeah. So I slow down my talking in my videos manually when I edit because I've been getting so much that I talk too fast. I think I also try to like talk slower. Like I try to remember, oh yeah, I gotta slow it down. But yeah, it's because I watch videos on 2x speed, like when I watch YouTube, so I'm used to hearing people talk fast, and when they talk too slow, I'm like, man, like it feels slow. Yeah. You know,
yeah, I think that works for you though. I think it keeps their attention. But it's this guy, I don't know if he's like some politician dude or whatever, he's come across a couple of times, but he talks very fast or whatever. So I think that's just like his way, one that sticks. Like I'm able to stick with what you're saying. I think it's pretty cool that you talk fast, because I think that's just one of your things. Like someone may not know, like maybe your channel or not, but like, oh, you're talking about the girl that talks real fast, talks about cybersecurity.
Like, oh my gosh. That's so funny. I hope that's not what people are saying. But you know what? It's fine. I own up to it.
I think that's it. How, like, okay. Now let's talk about some cool, interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you know what? Let's do this. The good and the bad of YouTube, right? You know, I think for the most part, we all just kind of talk about like the good stuff, but like, you know, the bad. Like, for example, I just did a live stream Thursday night with music from Epidemic Sounds, yet YouTube said I took it from another video that's like 5 or 6 years old.
Oh my
and I had
God.
To dispute it. I was like, hey, I'm using music from Epidemic Sounds that I have a license to use, like per YouTube's, like, you know, fair use and copyright policy or whatever. And it was literally just for like my intro going into the stream, like when I have like little countdown clock. And so like stuff like that, where you know for a fact you didn't go and take their video. Their video is in Spanish, and it's not anything related to my video at all, which is, I think, something, I know YouTube's working on that, but that's definitely something they can get better at. It's like, hey, I know y'all using algorithms and AI machine learning to kind of cross-reference these things, but a human eye needs to say deny, because this is not related to that at all.
True.
But what about you in your dealings with YouTube? What are some things maybe that you've experienced being a creator on the platform?
Yeah, I think the biggest strife I have with YouTube is with YouTube Studio. And, you know, when you upload a video and there's like that 1 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 ranking, that really gets to my head.
You think so?
Yeah. It definitely does. So like if I get a video that does, it's like a 10 out of 10, even though I really like the video, that definitely gets to me. And I'm just like, man, what can I change about that video to do better? I think it's a lot of being in my head. Yeah. Do you not usually look at that?
So I have TubeBuddy, and I think about getting one of those other tools that Roberto Blake kind of talked about that I may use to look for outliers and stuff on people's like pages and stuff on my own page. But no, because so YouTube has changed. Like, so when I got on this channel 4 years ago, it was all about tags, SEO, title, thumbnail. Now it's not really like that. They've changed the algorithm so much. I don't know if you noticed this on your home screen, but they're starting to recommend like very small channels on your home screen.
Yes.
Like
channels. Yeah. I did notice that.
So a lot of the stuff really doesn't really matter anymore. The thing that always boils down to it now is like, is the video good or not? Do people like it? That's the biggest thing that I think it boils down to. And also at least having, you know, a good thumbnail just to entice them to click. Because that's my pet peeve too. It's like all these gurus that email me, hey, we noticed that your video isn't, you know, SEO and yada, yada, yada. I can help you. And most of these people don't even have their own channel, but yet they can help me. I'm like,
oh my God, I get this too.
I'm just like, no, that's not how this works. It's like, either the video didn't come out the right time or there's some things I could change about it. It's going to perform like it's going to perform. And for me, for long form, I've had videos like, it'll go wild. And all of a sudden, they just start taking off. Like, surprisingly, people like... Yeah, like my video about like the day in the life of a SOC analyst, where like I have the slideshow talking to like college kids and some other people. That's like my most watched video on my channel. And I'm not doing anything special but teaching. Mm. And so that's how you start. I was in Roberto Blake's live stream the other day, and I was telling him, like, you know, I look at his tips, thanks. Like, I'm looking to like go to like 50K soon. And he was like, yeah, like just look at, you know, what's really your biggest view videos that you have now. And try to recreate them or that format and go from there, which I do plan on doing some more day in the life and some other stuff.
Yeah, you should. I think that would be really popular.
Yeah. So that's my first probably biggest video probably was my day in life for security on this video that I made like, what was it, in 2020? I think it's almost 4 years old now. I think that might have been like my biggest video because I seen that was the rage at the time. And it's like one of the few videos where, granted, I have my two screens blurred out, but mm-hmm. I'm not doing a voiceover. I'm telling you through different things, like, hey, what am I looking at? Because I forgot to do a voiceover when I was recording. So let me just add this text right here. And recording me, like, having some content meetings with, the SIM engineers and other things. So it was like just a real video of, like, what you would expect. But I plan to do an IR one soon. I just don't know when, because it's just like... If it's anything going on, it's like, cool. Like, I want to do it on a fun day. Like, cause I got my other camera over there. I just hadn't turned it on to record, but I plan to do that. I think that'll be a good one. How do you deal with, while you're still going through like a third party platform, like you have it connected to something where you just look at all your comments and stuff in one place, or do you still go into YouTube Studio or YouTube and view your comments?
Yeah, I primarily use YouTube Studio. I didn't even know there were connector apps. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You can do, like, I used to use this thing called SocialBee, which is cool. Like, it's this platform called AppSumo. I learned about this platform once I became like an entrepreneur, and it has so many different softwares for cheap.
Heard of this.
I like AppSumo.
It told me about SocialBee. He does like content too, right?
Who?
The CEO of AppSumo, Noah Coggin.
I don't know. He probably does.
Oh. Yeah, I've seen his book. It's like $1 Million Weekend or something.
Nice. Yeah. AppSumo, SocialBee, and this other tool I was using called Radar. They do some of the similar things where you can like reply to all your social medias in one place. Like if you're a person that you don't want to be on a timeline and you just want to reply, those are definitely good alternatives. For me, I like when I get like funny troll comments. I think they're hilarious. Depending on what it said, depends on what I'm gonna reply back to, because they don't really get me too mad. I just think they're funny and they're giving me activity on my video. So it's telling YouTube, hey, people like this video. So comment all the funny things that you can. So,
you know, that is a great way to look at it.
Yeah, it doesn't really, these people don't know me in real life. Most of these people are trolls. They don't have real pictures.
Facts.
They're mad or whatever's going on in their life. So they figure they'll just say something to me or about my guests. Like for me, I'm cool when you say something about me, but I don't really like when people come on there and say things about like my guest or whatever. I kind of like really do take offense to that. I'm like, you can say what you want about me, but these are my guests. Don't say anything about them. And that's how it goes. But I'm quick to like say a comment on them or either show their dumb comment to like my followers on Instagram or something. Like I see a lot of funny stuff or stuff that people will comment if they start talking about like other creators or coaches and stuff. It's like a lot like people try to do or try to come start funny stuff on my comments. I'll kind of laugh at it all.
Yeah.
But I do have to ask this though, because I know me being a creator for years, I know for a fact like you're not relying on like AdSense. I'm pretty sure AdSense is probably like 5% of whatever, you know, earnings you make from like YouTube. How were you able to scale from like not working like a full-time job, going straight into like content creation. Like, how was that?
Yeah. So yeah, AdSense honestly is like pretty low for me right now. I think it like halved like basically a year ago. And I think it's because like ads overall just got lower. I have no idea, but
no, it happened to me. Like I had to build it. I had to build it back up, and I'm still trying to build it back up to like where it was at one point. It's like, I was like, dang, it dropped a lot. Like every, like 1 month I had seen like, least like less than like, I think it was like 30 or 40,000 views. And so I had to build it back up. I was like, this is crazy. I've never like went under this. What's going on?
Yeah. Same. Cause okay.
I think it's YouTube.
Yeah. I think it's YouTube too. I think it's the way that they're, I don't know, sorting certain things. Cause I had another YouTuber also in the tech space. And he also told me he had the same issue with his YouTube AdSense going way down. And he's like a bigger creator than me. So yeah, I think it's on YouTube's end. But right now my primary income sources are sponsorships, affiliates, and I guess a little bit of AdSense. But and then also digital products. So okay. like a resume template or my interview prep course. Those are the main income streams. But I also saved almost all of my I saved a lot of money when I was working full time, since I was trying to be like as frugal as possible. So I saved up primarily for the sabbatical, and basically like the YouTube income is like trying to like sustain me for like however many months that I would want to continue. But I technically did start applying to jobs again for like the end of my sabbatical. So
okay,
yeah,
no, that's cool. I mean, I think that's everybody's like. Well, not everybody. I know for me, I do plan on taking my platform in more of a like have you ever watched This Week in Tech?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Just something like that. Like they have like, I don't know if they're in a studio or whatever, but like weekly, or I don't know if it's even daily, but I found that my subscribers actually enjoy that content. Now, eventually, hopefully YouTube pushes it out some more, because it's like some real stuff happening. Like all these breaches we've talked about in the last couple of weeks have been really hitting regular people. All these different healthcare breaches, people mm-hmm. are coming to my comments saying, hey, I just got this letter about, you know, my information was found. What should I do? And I'm pretty sure these people reached out to you, but I've been partnering with Aura the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And so I tell them, hey, listen, I use it. They let me know about my data was found in the AT&T breach before AT&T. I think you should try out their free trial, because I'm like, hey, I wouldn't tell you to use something that doesn't work. Like, that's how I am too. Yeah. When it comes to different people wanting me to do affiliates and stuff, I'm like, okay, what is this? I don't want to tell my audience about something that I don't believe in, or I think it may be priced not fair enough for them, for like them to get some benefit. Like, that's why I see like you do a lot of work with Springboard. Mm-hmm. And I should be doing more work with Springboard, but I haven't pushed them in a while. But one of the main reasons I agreed to do affiliate stuff for them was like, if they don't find them a job, to get their money back. So that was like a big selling point for me to actually go with saying it, because I knew kind of what it cost. But I was like, well, at least they can get their money back if they don't find anything. But I mean, mm-hmm. that's the worst case scenario. So I think that was cool.
Yeah, I think that's my logic too. But I have heard of Aura. I also used it before. I think my subscription expired though, so maybe I should start that back up. Because there's been a lot of stuff. I did partner with them like a while ago. I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago. But I was it must have been on Instagram actually. But
really?
Yeah.
I have some, if you want to, I do have some YouTube connections. If you ever want to do some type of video about protecting your identity or something in, like, definitely could probably at least patch you through. Cause I think they have one of the probably, if not the best, at least one of the better affiliate things out there. So,
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
But, I think I want to ask, so I know you just said you're probably thinking about the sabbatical may eventually end pretty soon. Hmm. Are you going to try to maybe dabble into like threat intel, or is it just like whatever role that you like and company you like that you're going to probably go back into?
Yeah. So I'm pretty open, basically. Like, for example, when I was applying after I left the bank, when I was applying to other jobs, I was also applying to software engineering roles. And actually, I ended up getting, like, surprisingly, I got more callbacks for software engineering than I did for cybersecurity, even though my last role was in a security rotational program. But I ended up going with Stack. But still, I think when I'm applying now, it's like a completely different job market compared to even just two and a half, three years ago. And now it's so much more competitive. And I hear it on, like, from people on my Discord all the time, like members of the community, because they're also in the job hunt, like entry level, even experienced hires. So I'm basically open to software engineering roles, but I'm also interested in like security software engineering roles or security engineering, as well as defensive and GRC roles. So I'm basically running the gamut. Threat intel, if I have a good enough resume for that, I'll like shoot my shot and apply to those roles, but I don't know how likely it is that I'll actually get them.
Cool. Yeah, I'll say, like, honestly, it's a little different. I think I've said this in a couple of episodes, but it is different. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things, like, one, companies are, like I said, hiring differently a little bit.
Right.
They are, some of them aren't really hiring, either the money's not there, they got to wait till their budget gets approved. I've typically always seen the end of Q2 and Q3 be the best time for hiring. But also in that time period from 2020 through like late 2021, early 2022, a lot of companies got burned a lot by people who probably should have never had a job. You had people interviewing for other people and then trying to do the job and getting people fired. So there's a lot of things on top of now. If you're not in a, I really see it going back to how it used to be with people who don't stay in big cities, because they're probably going to, they're having it the worst now, because especially for entry level people, there are not as many remote roles available. So now you have to probably make sure you get in the bigger city again, because most likely you probably be working hybrid of some sort. So I still see that as a challenge. For you, and then, like, you know, if your Discord sees this, I would say referrals, but not just any referrals. Referrals from hopefully somebody that either knows that hiring team or works closely with the team or works on the team. And someone could directly speak to, like, the hiring manager, someone on your behalf, or just who you are, and, hey, check out some of the stuff they worked on. Those tend to help out at least decently versus blindly applying now, unless you have a stellar resume. And they, you know, you really fit their skill set. And honestly, some of the interview processes are just longer now. They're taking a longer time to vet people. Yeah. You know, if you're already in a good situation, it's cool. Don't just, like, there are many different things. Like, whatever price you want to get paid, like, stand on it. If you know your value warrants that, like, if that's not what they're going to offer, they'll go in their way. But because the worst part is taking something you don't want to get, and then they mainly do that 2%, 3% raise, maybe.
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of makes you be upset and want to job hop again, because on the contrary, people or sometimes recruiters are saying, oh, well, why you didn't stay here a long time, blah, blah, blah. But the realistic recruiters won't ask that, because it's like, hey, prices have gone up so much even from last year to this year, or two years now, I shouldn't be asking anybody about job hopping, because they are most likely probably trying to survive and feed themselves or their family. So why do I care? Or why does a hiring manager care? If you cared that much about people job hopping, you will offer them better incentives to stay. That's one of the things I feel that a lot of companies should look into. Hey, if you're so scared about people leaving, hey, instead of CEO getting all that money, increase the raises every year to like from 3% to like 6%. At least try to let it be them. Or offset some housing costs or some daycare costs, something. If you're going to try, if you want them to stay, give them some better perks. I think people will stay. So it definitely is a hard market out here. So that's why, like, with me and even coaching, I'm always trying to like leverage like my relationships that I have with people that's in the industry with for some of my clients. And that's how my last client got the role with Yahoo. It's like, I'm really cool with the recruiter. Well, because I went through the process before. And she always reaches back out to me. She knows what I do. And she was like, hey, do you know any clients that, I mean, not clients, but do you know any people that would be good for this entry-level role we have opened up pretty soon? And I sent her, you know, two clients and, you know, one made it. But that's also because, and this is why I advocate for coaching. Mm. And it's one of the things that I've been talking about with clients. And you can tell me if you agree with this or not. Though I think a lot of these courses are good, and I'm speaking even just about strictly about going on a blue team, a lot of the skills you learn are kind of like here, here, like here, here, but they aren't pieced together. So where I come in is I show you how to link these skills together. And when it comes to the interview, even if you don't have the 2-3 years experience, it sounds like it because I've showed you how to leverage the different skills you learned and how they should be applied to a SOC or an IR role.
Interesting. So that's what you do. Right. So it's basically someone who has some basic foundational knowledge, but they haven't applied it. And then you go in and fill in the blanks for, with these skills, this is how you would apply it in like a real life situation. Yes, there's a lot of missing context in a lot of courses out there. And I do agree that if there's someone that can fill in those gaps, it would really help people who are entry level and aren't able to fill those gaps without experience because they're entry level. But I didn't realize that coaching filled that. That's pretty cool though. Like, I'm assuming you're offering technical coaching.
Yeah, so that's my my niche. So I've been in SecOps and IR the last 7 years. And so for me, I do plan on doing like a SOC IR course, but it's not going to be like the other courses because it's like there's a ton of technical things. It's going to be like, hey, you just got a SOC, you know, role offer, job offer like yesterday, and it says you're going to start in 2 weeks. How can I be ready to start? So it's going to be stuff like that. So things that the technical things they'll talk about, it'll focus on non-technical things. Like if you get in a new environment, where to find information, who to go talk to, how to leverage a ticketing system correctly. Like these are actually simple things, but they can save you a lot of time when you're in a new environment. And I always teach my clients, it's like, hey, your job as a SOC analyst, you're going to either prove if this is, you know, a true positive or a false positive. That's like the first thing you're trying to prove, which is like your hypothesis and everything. Because if you don't have a mindset of how you attack it, every alert you see that fires in the sim, you're going to spend like an hour or two on it because you think it's bad because it just fired. Yeah. And that's not what it is. And I only said that because that's how I was when I first seen stuff like start coming into the sim years ago. I was just like, okay, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole just to realize somebody emailed the team about this like an hour ago when it's suspected activity. Could have saved you so much like pain. Like, so just stuff like that. Like the people like thank them for it. And so even on my page, my SOC analyst interview questions are scenario based. And sometimes they'll say, well, I've never worked with an Amazon S3 bucket or I don't know this. I said, it's cool. I don't know everything that fires either, but I go research it. And so that's where regardless of your answer is right or wrong, go try it out.
Yeah.
When they go do that, they kind of learn and say, well, thanks for changing my mindset. I said, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I think especially when you're working in SOC, there's so many rabbit holes you can go down. Like it can take up so much time if you don't know exactly what are the right things to dig into and the things that you can ignore. So yeah, that'd be really valuable.
Yeah, that's coming down the pipeline. But I want to ask you, I guess, what are some things or what is something that I didn't ask you that you thought I would have asked you?
Whoa, this is an interesting interview question. Maybe about salary. I feel like that comes up sometimes when I'm in these kinds of interviews.
Yeah, you know, I'm like in a rock and a hard place sometimes about asking about money. Mm-hmm. Like for me, I kind of know what people could possibly be making based on region and experience. But I guess my listeners do want to know. And I guess I should have asked, I guess, from the Bank of America role and Stack Overflow role, I guess, like, what were those salaries like? like that you got, like your first cybersecurity salaries?
So honestly, they were very similar. And I've already shared publicly my bank salary. So I was making $115 in New York. So it's a pretty high salary, I would say, for post-college. But in the New York City area, I don't know how it really compares. But I think it's still relatively high-ish for entry level. And then at Stack, I was making, I think when I left, around $123-ish, something like that. And yeah, honestly, I'm pretty open for like, especially like security analysts or like cybersecurity pay transparency, because the range is crazy. I've seen some SOC analyst listings for like $40,000 a year and like others like $100,000 plus. But for the most part, the Stack one was fully remote and the salary would have been the same anywhere in the US. And at that time, I was living, I'm no longer living in the New York City metro area. So it's like the rent's not like $3,000-$4,000 a month anymore. So that makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's cool. So with those roles, did you get any bonus out of it?
I think it was like a pretty typical like $3,000 to $4,000 or $5,000 bonus. Yeah, so it wasn't like anything crazy.
Yeah. So what I do know about banking is like based on whatever level you come in at is where you start getting like the bigger bonuses. So you start being like AVP, VP and up. That's when you start getting the bonuses that could be in the 10%, 15%, 20%, 25%, 30%. They're called, you know, banking though, they'll call them discretionary. So on your offer letter, it may like, for example, when I worked at GS, my base was like, I think 130. But I had already been confirmed from the recruiter that in January I was going to get a discretionary bonus of $30,000. So
gotcha.
It wouldn't be on the offer letter, but that's what it was for the first year. And it was like, mind you, I started in like November 2021 and I got all the money the next year. So it was like crazy. And I didn't have to pay it back when I left. So
nice.
Cool. Yeah. These are some of the kind of things that I kind of, I mean, people, I think I've said it on my podcast before, but it's also like different things when I'm helping people negotiate, like, you know, offer letters, or we're asking them different questions to see whatever we can get. Because I always ask people, my clients, hey, if you're going to get an offer letter around this time or later, let's ask them, hey, do they have a bonus? Will you be eligible if you start this late? Could you guys give me a comp buyout? Which comp buyouts aren't too common, but if you do get a bonus, and you're going to come to that company and possibly miss out on money,
right?
Ask them about it. And they tell you, yes, you know, all they got to do is see documentation that you're supposed to get that money and they'll agree to pay you that money as well. So it'd be kind of like a sign on bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely, I think we probably could do like a live stream deep dive on like on some of this other stuff. Cause I still feel like there are other things that we probably experienced that might be similar as well. But like I said, I know most of the people that are still watching probably already know who you are. But the people that are listening, how can they, you know, follow you like on all your social platforms?
So on YouTube, I'm at With Sandra, and on LinkedIn, I'm also at With Sandra. I recently made a cybersecurity Instagram, which I probably should have made years ago, but it's Cyber With Sandra. So you can find me there.
Okay, cool. I'll definitely make sure to link all those in the description. And you guys know where to find me. Textual Chatter everywhere, or the Textual Talk, where you'll see this be on the platform. You can listen to it. But I appreciate everybody that tuned in. It's been another episode of the show. And like I always say, let's stay textual. We out. Peace.
See ya.